Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by Lady Kelsey of Lethbridge, whose words are, "A drop of golden sun."
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Chapter 15, Sansa of A Game of Thrones, and Viserys 1 in A World of Ice and Fire. Mm-hmm. So, got a lot to get to today. The World of Ice and Fire bit is just getting bigger and bigger,
yeah.
And it is...
I was like, I told Sir Ezra, I was like, I think it slows down for a bit. And he was like, I'm pretty sure the Dance with Dragons is next. Oh, and by the way, there's also a novella for that. And so we found the audiobook of that, and
right.
It's 3 hours.
Right,
so
yeah.
So yeah. we're going to break that down again, I believe, for our patrons.
Right.
Just as we did Sons of the Dragon. What is this one called? This is the Queen and the Dragon, I believe.
It's a Princess and...
The Princess and the Queen.
Yeah, Princess and the Queen.
Mm-hmm. Or the Blacks and the Greens.
Yeah, the Blacks and the Greens, yeah. So it'll kind of... what we're going to do today is sort of the precursor to that, actually.
Right.
So yeah, we'll have Viserys and his reign today, and then we'll go over... the following week, we'll be in A Dance of Dragons. So on Patreon, we'll have the complimentary sort of, Black Council episode with that. So yeah.
That week?
Is that next week?
Well, kind of.
Yeah, kind of. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, I gotcha.
2 weeks for us, because we're recording a little early.
We're recording a little early, because I'm going on vacation this week. I'm returning to the Kingdom of Portland, and Sir Ezra's going on vacation next week.
Right. I have actually sent Lord Adam Parker on ahead of me.
I know.
We randomly saw that he might be taken off, so I hate to give his whereabouts away. But, I needed to send one of my boys on ahead to make sure the kingdom was secure and it was safe for me to enter.
Yeah. He is. I guess we might as well just go ahead and say it, because that way we can say where you're going.
Yeah, Orlando.
Yeah, the Kingdom of Orlando. Both you guys venture into the south.
Yeah, I might run into him down there.
Yeah, no,
it'd be great.
There, yeah, when you're there and he gets there, yeah.
But we do have a lot of, it caused a little bit of a hiccup in the recording schedule, so we're recording this a little early, a little strange, but...
it's okay, yeah.
Yeah, we're getting after it, so... Okay, into the small council, and actually before that, the email address for Ravens is btkcast@gmail.com, and you can also give us a call at 614-547-2350. Every Friday we do sort of a follow-up Friday, clear up until Fire and Blood comes out, and then we will kind of readjust, make
them.
That yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Alrighty, the small council, what do you have for us, Sir Matt?
Not a lot, because we recorded the episode a couple of days ago. So there is actually, I guess, the news I found this week. Nothing on, although Gurr actually did update, not a blog since the last time I looked, but nothing major there.
Yeah.
But this kind of saw on Instagram, because I follow Jason Momoa on Instagram, who played Khal Drogo.
Is he coming back? Is he in season 8?
Well, I think they're done filming, at least with the majority of the filming. It seems like they're having like wrap up parties. And so some of the actors that have been in the series before have been kind of seen in pictures and things like that.
Really?
So, yeah, Jason Momoa is one because he was posting all over his Instagram.
Yeah. Wow.
But another one is, I'm sorry, I don't have his name pulled up here. Oh, Mark Addy, who played Robert Baratheon.
Wow. That's awesome. What are these? Are they just coming back to celebrate, or are they?
I think so. Yeah. But of course, everyone's like,
oh. Yeah, is there flashbacks? Is there more? Yeah,
I hope so, man. He's great. I love I love his portrayal of Robert Baratheon.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's absolutely great. He's one of Robert Baratheon is one of my favorite characters.
Right.
Just the Baratheons in general are kind of some of my favorite characters. But I just really it's unfortunate that he dies in, you know, season one, because I just thought is a really good character.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's good. He and Ned. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's like, yeah. So, yeah. Okay. Well, that's cool. That's pretty neat. We'll keep an eye on that. So,
do you think there's gonna be a flashback?
Yeah, there's gonna be something.
Yeah.
Or even like a voiceover. Wouldn't it be cool if there's like a voiceover and it's like someone's recalling something he said?
You know what I think what might be a cool scene is Cersei's pregnant this season. What if she has like a miscarriage?
Yeah.
Which some people the Talking Thrones his. Breakdown of the big, there was like a plot leak, whatever.
Yeah,
a lot of people now are saying these plot leaks are issued by Dan and Dave, you know, the showrunners.
Yeah,
so that like they're releasing their own just fake. They're good. They're like, man, this could be. But in that, Cersei has a miscarriage.
Yeah,
and so what if actually we had a Cersei kind of flashback scene?
Yeah,
to like her being pregnant, with the child she did lose that, you know, may have been Jaime's.
Or Roberts,
right? Yeah, seems to be a difference in the show and the books there, but
yeah.
So,
well, yeah, and also, I mean, we have Bran. We have the ability to go back and see scenes that maybe we weren't privy to from a certain point of view or something like that. You know? So.
Yeah. He definitely couldn't play like a younger version or anything.
No.
It would have to be something just like right before. Mm-hmm. Right before what was going on. So maybe actually, what could be cool is maybe like a Jon Arryn flashback.
Mm-hmm.
John Aaron, the seed is strong, and maybe what sets the whole thing up.
Right. Yeah, that could be.
So something like that could be kind of cool.
That'd be neat. All right. Also, just some other show news here in the small council for us here at BTK Cast. Send us your Westerosi titles and names, house words. We have the Google Doc, which we're working on, and we're getting all of our patrons geared up in there. And then, as always, you can always send your Take the Black. You can always give us a call or send us a little audio file with your vows there. We do have a knighting ceremony coming up at the end of this episode, so stay tuned for that. And I think that's it for kind of show news.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so here we go. And I'm glad we got through that quick because we have a bit here in the Maester's study.
Mm-hmm.
So let's head on over there and dig into this. Now, last week, Sir Matt's going to pull up just some of the text, and we're going to read a little bit more of the Viserys 1 portion. And I'll kind of summarize it before we jump into that, though, and get us back to where we're. I keep combing back over these things, you know, from Aegon the Conqueror to his two sons, Aenys Targaryen and Maegor the Cruel. And Sir Matt and I were just talking. We need to possibly map out a potential two lines of the Targaryen.
Yeah, so something I was actually kind of thinking about, and then I was doing some research on Reddit. And someone has posted this huge theory they're working on. By the way, there's three Reddits for the Game of Thrones. There is the Game of Thrones itself Reddit, which is much more focused on the show. The A Song of Ice and Fire one, which I go to a lot. And there's actually there's a really good kind of community over there. Actually, the guys that run Not a Pod, which is another podcast that we had no idea existed.
No idea until three days ago.
Until like a couple weeks ago. Or yeah, I guess a couple days ago, a couple weeks. Same thing.
Same thing.
For me, it was a couple weeks, and I think for you,
it was a couple days.
And realized, wow, these guys are also doing a reread, and they're actually just like two or three chapters ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. But one of the guys there, I think both the guys there are moderators on that.
Yeah,
on Reddit. But anyway, so we found this theory, and this guy, and we're going to do a breakdown of it, kind of our own version, because we were kind of talking about it. Is you have Aegon Targaryen. and he has his two wives. And it almost seems like actually there really are two Targaryen kind of lines. Then you also have two Targaryen swords, Blackfyre and Darksister. And so kind of tracing their lines along with the children of Rhaenys and the children of Visenya. And then, of course, it splits later and you have the Blackfyres and the Targaryens. And so just kind of really, it's really interesting.
Just paying it. It's like paying attention to who the sword passes down to and which hand it was in.
Well, in addition, it's probably gonna be a two part thing, the swords and the crown. Yeah. The bloodlines of the crown. Because as I thought it was interesting last week when we were talking about Jaehaerys, how he took the golden crown of his father, which was Aenys.
Yep.
As opposed to, then you have like Maegor, who took the Valyrian Steel's crown of Aegon.
Aegon, yep.
Right, so.
Yeah.
Just interesting.
It is, very interesting. And so actually that was a perfect little segue going backwards into, you know, back to Aegon's conquest and then that line. And last week we were in talking about Jaehaerys the First. And basically, you know, how his reign is 50 to 55 year reign, which was peaceful and prosperous. Essentially, the two big things going forward from that reign that we want to bring up again today is the Great Council of 101 AC, which basically put, and I should make it more clear, all going forward out of that council, they determined that it was important to preserve the male line,
right,
not the female line.
Exactly.
So, and that is the whole point with that. So that's where they, you know, they passed over, I think it's Jaehaerys, his eldest granddaughter for his eldest grandson type of thing. So, that's the basics there on that.
Right.
And, you know, that was just, so that's Jaehaerys. That is immediately called into question with Viserys the First.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's,
yeah. And then that other question is raised. Should it be, if I have two sons, is it the son of the first son or does it just go to the second son?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Well, and that's a very good point because, we have, so Jaehaerys's grandson, Viserys the First is reigning, ruling now where we're at, right? He has a brother, I believe it's Daemon. Yep. Daemon Targaryen. And he is super ambitious and basically wants, he is hoping that the crown will pass to him because a lot of these Targaryens like die in battle or, die of young ages.
Sickness
or something, just different things, you know? So it was rare to have Jaehaerys, the old king, right, live that long. And so he's really hoping, being the second son, that he can take the crown, that the crown will pass to him. And I believe it does, actually, if he has no male heirs.
Yeah, and then later, there's kind of levels to this, is what it seems like, because later, as we get to, when we get to Aegon the Fourth, we're going to be talking about what about bastards? You know, I mean, he legitimizes all his, but, that's another question, because, you know, should Gendry or Edric Storm in the books have more of a claim to Robert's crown than Stannis? So, you know, just kind of.
Right. Yeah. Those are interesting questions. Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about his early reign real quick. King Viserys, he's actually married to Queen Emma of the Vale. She's Queen Emma Arryn, who's actually his cousin.
Yeah.
And you want to go ahead and read there?
Yeah, here we go. After the long and peaceful reign of Jaehaerys the First, Viserys inherited a secure throne, a full treasury, and a legacy of goodwill that his grandfather had cultivated over 50 years. House Targaryen was never again so powerful as it was in Viserys' reign. More princes and princesses of the blood existed than at any other time since the Doom, and there were never so many dragons at one time as there were in the years 103 to 129 AC.
Yeah, we're blowing up again,
guys. We just got a man. Just get
another
these,
raven.
Got a raven right here as we're doing this here. But the great upheaval of the Dance of Dragons had its roots in Viserys' reign, and it was chiefly due to the Blood Royals. In the early part of his reign, Viserys' one chief annoyance was his own brother, Prince Daemon Targaryen. Daemon was I don't know that word, and quick to take offense, but he was dashing, daring, and dangerous. He was knighted at 6 and 10, like Maegor won, and Jaehaerys won himself, gave Daemon the Valyrian steel blade Darksister for his prowess. He had been among the brashest of Viserys' supporters prior to the Great Council and had even gathered a small army of sworn sword and men-at-arms when rumors claimed that Corlys Velaryon was readying a feat to defend the rights of his son, Laenor. King Jaehaerys avoided bloodshed, but many remembered that Daemon had been ready to come to blows over the matter.
Yeah, that's a good point. I should probably go ahead and pull up. Will you pull up the wiki page for Viserys' first daughter, and we can kind of look at who she marries, which is one of the Velaryons. So Daemon, yeah, he's basically hoping that he can become Prince of Dragonstone, which is once you name your heir, the heir to the Iron Throne, they sit and hold the seat at Dragonstone, which. Just a sidebar here, that's where Stannis, right? Stannis holds that
Dragonstone,
seat,
yep.
Right? So, I mean, not that he doesn't have heirs in King's Landing and stuff, but, like, just interesting that that is sort of the jumping ground, like, as to who would be next in line if Robert Baratheon dies. His brother, right? Stannis. Or any kids that he could have, which are with him in King's Landing. I don't know. It's just interesting to look at that little correlation. But, so Daemon, you know, is coveting his brother's throne. He actually, before, he's a big supporter of his brother in the 101 Great Council with Jaehaerys. Like, when people are proposing that one of Jaehaerys' elder granddaughters is put in over Viserys, his brother wants to, he's got sworn swords for them. He's ready to go to war, basically, to ensure that Viserys is ready to go. Yep. Okay, so let's see now. So, did you mention that he had married Queen Emma, right? His cousin, and I think it's a good marriage.
No, I did.
I'm not sure that was in the text. It's in the text. I'm just not sure where.
Yeah.
But basically, they have one child. Her name is it Rhaenyra?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, it's Rhaenyra Targaryen, and she is like. People dote on her. She's well loved. She's basically named the heir apparent. And sort of what happens here is that Viserys' brother Daemon he gets a little upset. He gets a little testy. He gets a little, you know, because he's actually pushing. I think he's happy that his brother's not having male heirs, correct? And so he's sort of like he's with. Like, he doesn't want her to be named the heir apparent. And actually, Viserys himself is, like, hoping to have a male heir, even though he loves, you know, Rhaenyra as much as he does. And so he actually has a second marriage, which is to... where is it at here? Who does he marry second there? Hightower?
Yeah.
Alicent Hightower?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He marries her, and basically, you know, they have a couple kids, and... All goes well.
Yeah, Alicent Hightower. They have Aemond, Darren, Helaena, and Aegon II.
Right. Yeah, I'm just going to open this up so I can kind of read some of it.
I'll go right ahead.
So having two queens and having, you know, one who, you know, Queen Alicent now wants her children to be considered next in line for the throne, okay? But Queen Rhaenyra is, or Princess Rhaenyra is, like, hopeful. She's actually appointed, you know, he names her heir, right? He, after the death of his first wife, she goes to Dragonstone. She's, like, at court. She's walking around King's Landing. She's his cupbearer, her father's cupbearer, and, you know, she's, everyone likes her. I think even when he announces that she's going to be his heir, a bunch of kings and lords come from around the kingdom and they hear him and make this announcement and they accept, okay, she's next up. Because at that point, he didn't have any grandchildren. He didn't have any, it was just like, who is his heir? And then you look at his brother and his brother's kids, etc. So he wants to ensure that his line kind of continues. And so there you go. He has Rhaenyra. Now, Otto Hightower, the name Hightower should be familiar to you guys. That keeps coming up, right? The Hightowers from Old Town. Mm-hmm. They want to be in power. And so Otto Hightower is his hand. He's Viserys' hand. and he keeps pushing for him to get married again. And so he does. He actually marries Allison Hightower, his daughter, and they have several kids.
Yeah. Yeah, they have Aegon II, Helena, Aemond, and Darren. Yeah, Allison Hightower. Trying to see here.
Well, she
I'll go ahead.
Well, I'll just say she has. I mean, she herself also wants to see her children. She has a firstborn son named Aegon, and then I think it's Helena Targaryen, and then Aemond Targaryen as well. She has those three that I know that are healthy. I think Darren Targaryen and Trystane might not actually. This is Trystane allegedly. Nah, that could be bastard born. But Darren Targaryen, I believe, dies. I have to check into that. But anyways, her son Aegon, and all these characters are going to be brought up again in the Dance of Dragons.
Yeah.
You know, she wants him to be come the next king. And she's pushing for that, right? And that as long as Viserys is alive, that is not going to be the case. And so, you know, that's sort of his big... That's sort of the big thing here is just this line of succession. I don't think there was any major battles or conflicts during his reign, Sir Matt.
No, not really. Really, it all kind of starts there at the tourney at King's Landing, 111.
Right, when they start wearing the different
colors. Yeah, so in 111, a great tourney was held at King's Landing on the fifth anniversary of the king's marriage to Queen Alicent. At the opening feast, Alicent wore a green gown, whilst Prince Rhaenyra dressed in Targaryen red and black. Note was taken, and thereafter it became the custom to refer to greens and blacks when talking of the queen's party and the party of the princess. Respectively, in the tourney itself, the greens were defeated by the blacks when Sir Criston Cole, wearing Princess Rhaenyra's favor, unhorsed all of the queen's champion, including two of her cousins and her youngest brother, Sir Gawain Hightower. And this is where it all... You know, the Dance of Dragons, the first kind of seeds of it kind of starts right here where you have, and then later we'll get to the Green Council and the Black Council.
Right. Yeah. I'll read a little bit here about our friend Prince Daemon, because again, the king's brother, you know, when he does marry Alicent, right, you have that, Sir Matt's talking about the tourney. I think it's important to note that he actually then allies himself with the sea snake. He's tired of waiting for a crown that seems like it's going to be more and more distant. He's determined to carve out his own kingdom. So Corlys Velaryon and he make this common cause, which is something that Sir Matt had just mentioned when we first started here. And basically they go to war with Lys and Myr and Tyrosh. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Daemon wants to be king of the Narrow Sea, essentially. Yeah. The Stepstones there, I think he takes control of. And you have to understand, he and Viserys and Daemon's relationship is, it's a good one. I think Viserys truly loves his brother, but his brother's just super ambitious and kind of hot-headed. Mm-hmm. At one point, he's even, like, not demoted, but he's, because of he and Otto Hightower working to get Alicent in as queen, they don't agree, and he's... demoted, air quote, to the city watch, right?
Yeah, and something I don't think we mentioned last week, just when we were talking about some of the feats of Jaehaerys, is Jaehaerys actually starts to, I guess, kind of interact more with Essos and stuff like that. It had talked about him kind of building a fleet and sending, dispatching people over there. And so I think that is also something you kind of see here where Daemon is like, oh, I want to kind of control this, because it seems like trade is starting to, between Essos and Westeros, is starting to pick up. So.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. You know, because Viserys is actually in fit. He supports his brother going to make war with these. It's they're doing it sort of like, air quote, on behalf of the throne. Really, they're doing it for their own gain. But
right.
You know,
which is, it's just as interesting because we haven't really heard about Essos in about 100 years since Aegon conquered it. Because 100 years ago in Essos, it was like, you know, all over the place. You know, once Aegon kind of leaves and it's you know, just conquered, and really it seems like everybody had kind of warred themselves to death. So
yeah, yep. Okay, so, you know, remember that tourney that you were talking about earlier? So actually, Prince Damon comes back after he's killed the Mirish prince, and, you know, he's named himself King of the Narrow Sea.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, yeah, here's the passage for that, if you want. Yeah, the fighting began in 106 AC with the Sea Snake providing the fleet and Daemon providing Caraxes and his skill in commanding men to lead the Second Sons and Landless Knights who flocked to Daemon's banner. King Viserys contributed to their war, sending gold for the hire of men and supplies. They won many victories over the next 2 years, culminating in Prince Daemon killing the Mirish prince, Admiral Cragus Dahar, called Crab Feeder, in single combat. When he learned that Daemon had declared himself king of the Narrow Sea in 109 AC, King Viserys was heard to say that his brother could keep his crown if it could keep him out of trouble. Mm-hmm. It proved a premature claim to victory. However, the Triarchy dispatched a new fleet and army the following year, and Dorne joined the Triarchy in the war against Daemon's fledging petty kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, when he comes back to that tourney, and you have the, you know, Alicent wearing green, you know, and Rhaenyra wearing black. He actually presents there's a real good picture of it in A World of Ice and Fire, presenting, you know, the crown to Viserys. You know, he's his brother. He's just like, takes a knee, here's the crown, and Viserys picks him back up, puts the crown back on his head, gives him a couple kisses, and we're good to go. Like, good to have you back.
Which is interesting because a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Aenys and Maegor, the same thing is that this was mentioned in Dance of Dragons. I don't believe it was mentioned in A World of Ice, or not. It was mentioned in Sons of the Dragon,
right?
Not World of Ice and Fire. That Maegor bows. He takes a knee to Aenys, and Aenys lifts him up and says, "You'll never bend a knee to me again." Names him Hand of the King.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. 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 So
just kind of similar.
Yeah, it is similar. Yeah, it is. And it's sometimes you have to remember their family, right? And they do love each other, but there's this. You know, it's the royal family, though. And there's all this drama of mm-hmm. who's going to be next in line and people scheming to.
I mean, just look at our world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We were asking questions a couple of weeks ago. Which royal wedding was better?
Okay, I know.
You know?
I know. Yeah. I know.
I mean, are you I'm a Kate Middleton fan more than who's the new one? What's her name? Meghan Markle or something?
Yeah. Yeah, I have no idea. Yeah, I don't follow the rules that close. Now in 107 AC, as I mentioned before, Alicent, you know, actually has a boy named Aegon, and as we said earlier, you know, he does not actually set aside Rhaenyra. He decides mm-hmm. to keep her as the heir apparent and princess of Dragonstone. But suspiciously here, Viserys. His brother Daemon, when he comes back, he presents the crown. For a while, he's in good graces. I mean, just for a short while. It wasn't too long after that he's actually banished again. And there's a lot of rumor that kind of circulates that perhaps he was trying to seduce Rhaenyra, mm-hmm. you know, which would be his niece, right? His brother's firstborn daughter, and heir to the throne. And that kind of makes sense to me, right? Because he's hoping that if he marries her, then he then himself will, you know, have the throne that way. Does that make sense? I mean, so now there were other situations where Otto Hightower had been really pushing and overstepping himself. In 109 AC, he was replaced by Lord Lionel Strong, who had served ably as Master of Laws. For King Viserys, the matter was long settled. Rhaenyra was his heir, and he did not wish to hear arguments otherwise. Despite the decrees of the great council of 101, which always placed a man above a woman. So, you know, Otto Hightower is out. Now, there's all sorts of rumors that surround Rhaenyra and who she hooks up with. And I'm going to give you one, which will come from the, The Princess and the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
In that story, it goes into more detail than we have here. And basically, she actually, when she's promised to Coral's Valerion's son, she I believe he's openly gay,
mm-hmm.
and yep. she does not wish to, you know, she's not happy about that union, that marriage, etc. And so she kind of gives herself to she gives up her maidenhead to Strong, you know, Lionel Strong. and it's whispered that, you know, it could have been of her own doing. She could have been something that to do with, you know, with Damon. You know, she also at one point too is courting what's his name, one of the Kingsguard guys. You remember him? He's the one who really sets things in motion with the Dance of Dragons.
Sir Criston Cole.
Sir Criston Cole. Yep.
Yeah. Right here. This is a little bit later here. Yeah. Rhaenyra was of a different mind entirely because she was supposed to marry. What's his name? I can't remember. Perhaps she harbored hopes of wedding Prince Daemon, as Eustace claims, or of seducing Criston Cole to her bed, as Mushroom cheerfully suggested. Mushroom is like a court gesture dwarf. Mm-hmm. But he apparently sees a lot of stuff going on, so he's, you know,
right.
He's like the patch face of this. But Viserys would hear none of it, and against all her objections, he needed only to note that if she refused the marriage, he would reconsider the line of succession. And then came to the final break between Sir Criston Cole and Rhaenyra. Though to this day, we do not know if it was instigated by Sir Criston or Rhaenyra. Did she try to seduce him once more? Did he finally admit his love now that it seemed she'd be wed and tried to persuade her to run away with him? We cannot say, nor can we say if there's any truth to the claim that after Cole left her, she instead gave up her maidenhood to Sir Harwin Strong, a much less scrupulous sort of knight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, if we're talking about just Viserys right here, I think so we talked about his first marriage, his second, and then his later reign. You know, if we go any further, we're basically getting into a Dance of Dragons, I think.
Uh-huh.
Which is what we want to get into. But once we get there, you got to talk about the whole thing.
The whole thing, yeah.
And really what I think Sir Matt and I would like to do is go back and read in full The Princess and the Queen to make sure that we have all
everything.
Those nitty-gritty details there. So
yeah, but,
the setup here is that you have a princess and a queen who both are, you know, wanting the Iron Throne or their son or themselves to be on it. And, you know, Rhaenyra just kind of goes a little wild here. She's got a couple of different guys that she could be with. Her uncle, you know, Lionel Strong, Criston Cole, you know. So,
well, here, this is going to be somewhat, I guess, spoilers for what's going to be coming up, not just with the Dance Dragon, but in the future, something we've mentioned a lot. This is from the wiki here. Emma's daughter, Rhaenyra, had 6 children. One of them stillborn, the youngest 2 of Rhaenyra's living children, Prince Aegon and Viserys, would later become kings, Aegon III and Viserys II. It would be the line of Viserys II that continued the line of Dragon Kings. In addition, Aegon's daughter, Danaea, and Viserys' son, Aegon, had a bastard son together, Daemon, who would later create House Blackfyre.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really talking as we'll be getting into these next couple weeks, we're going to be hitting the Dance of Dragons, which is really, I guess you could almost argue Blackfyre Rebellion Part 1. And then, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like that's definitely the precursor to it. And then getting to the Blackfyre Rebellion.
Right. Yeah.
It's all coming.
Yeah. So I guess to finish here, how Viserys 1, he actually dies in 129 AC. It says during a nap in the Red Keep, mm-hmm. Right? So
yeah, on the
right here is pretty peaceful.
On the third day of the third moon of 129 AC, while entertaining Jaehaerys and Jaehaera from his bed with a tale of their great grandsire and his queen battling giants, mammoths, and wildlings beyond the wall, the king grew tired. He sent his grandchildren away, and the tale was done, and he fell into a sleep from which he never awoke. He had ruled for 26 years, reigning over the most prosperous era in the history of the Seven Kingdoms, but seeding with it the disastrous decline of his house and the death of the last of the dragons.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. I mean, in all honesty, though, he probably is one of the better kings, considering what you have to look at for the kings of Westeros since Aegon's conquest.
Yeah,
he himself actually was really kind of like a good guy. It's just kind of his family is just, I think, too big.
Yeah, when he actually has a pretty decent, you know, reign. He has, it's a 26-year reign,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty awesome. And as I said, it seems like the kingdom overall, from what we could gather, was for the most part at peace.
Yeah.
It's just these, you know, I don't know what it is, you know, that just wanting ignoring, I guess, counsel, right? The great council's orders, and then kind of saying he's the king. I mean, I we could actually sit down and have a whole sidebar conversation about whether, you know, is it okay for the new king to have another great council and say, no, I want this to happen.
Exactly.
Which is kind of what he did. Mm-hmm. And then to have his wife, after he dies, kind of plot against him and say, we're going to ignore those orders. You know, the realm sort of ignored it. And, you know, the sneak peek here, they don't even tell Rhaenyra that her father has died.
Yeah.
They actually just sneakily, like his second wife, Alison Hightower, just crowns her son Aegon.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that. But yeah. I mean, that's basically the premise of all of this. So he kind of, had he have reconsidered or what have you, you know, I don't know. I don't know if he could have reconsidered after he declares Rhaenyra to be the heir apparent. And then he has a son. Can he go back on that? He could have used the Council of 101 AC to sort of back that idea, that train of thought. But I think he loved that his daughter in that way. And so he was just like, you know, and she was very smart and savvy and was his cupbearer and was around the small council a lot. And a lot of people liked her and actually were in favor of her, you know, ruling. And she was older than she was much older than Aegon the second.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, a sneak peek at next week. Just the first line here of Aegon the second. No war was ever bloodier or crueler than the Dance of Dragons.
Yep.
So,
yeah. So we'll do a little more work
until the war, you know, the great war comes in season 8.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But we'll get a little more in depth with that and we'll kind of sort this out. You know, it would have been nice for us to do like maybe the Black Council episode before this, but just because of recording, we recorded this way ahead of time. So we'll read that that novel and we'll do the Black Council and we'll come back ready to go for A Dance of Dragons next week. So be ready. If you have specific questions or if you read ahead and you have thoughts on The Dance of Dragons, we are completely fine with reading some stuff in the Maester Study from our listeners. So if you have thoughts or things, you know, send those to BTKcast.
Yeah, and absolutely. You know, I will say this. We get, you know, a lot of the Ravens we get focus. Really, actually, a lot of the Ravens I feel like we get are for the show, which is cool.
Yeah, which is awesome.
It's just cool. It's just, I think there's kind of three things. You know, we've got A World of Ice and Fire, which it doesn't seem like we ever really get a lot of Ravens from.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be cool if you guys could just pitch. I'm definitely down to dive into.
Well, yeah, and I think some of those. You know, some of it is just people.
This is all new for a lot of people.
Yeah, and you're just kind of listening to it. It's some of it's new for us, to be honest with you. So it's nice for us to dive into it. And we'd love to hear if you're, you know, a listener and you've read it multiple times and you've studied up on the Dance of Dragons, then hit us up for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. So
okay. I think that's it for the Maester Study. Let's dive into the reread for this week.
Yeah, I'll read the recap. From last week, Catelyn's breakdown over Bran's fall ends when an attempt is made on Bran's life. Catelyn delays the assassin long enough for Bran's direwolf to arrive and kill the assassin. Catelyn is now convinced Bran did not fall, but was pushed.
Yeah, I'm convinced as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Chapter 15, Sansa. So this is her first point of view. She's exploring the camp, and she goes out riding with her betrothed, Prince Joffrey, near the Ruby Ford. They come across Arya Stark and the Butcher's Boy playing swords, playing knight, right? And Joffrey begins to torment the boy until he is attacked by Arya Stark.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there's your summary. Let's dive into some of these details here. Let's see if there's anything. I'm trying to think of something specific or something that...
to break this up into...
Well, no, I think we'll just kind of dive into the thing as a whole. It's not you do have the first part, which is more her exploring the camp, and then she runs into two significant fellas, three actually, and then you've got her ride and her trip with Joffrey, and then you've got the Butcher's Boy.
Yeah, the Butcher's Boy. Yeah.
So let's dive in that first part there. She's excited because to start the day off, she knows she's going to be riding in that wheelhouse.
Right. Yeah. The Queen's wheelhouse and. It really kind of starts again, and it's almost like I find this interesting. This is Sansa's first chapter, and before we had Arya's chapter, and they kind of start the same way, but there it is interesting. Actually, like I went back and actually listened to the Arya chapter again, and they actually almost they're identical, really, in the way they start, and they both involve Septa Mordain, but this time, and this is where we get into it. POV is everything. In the Arya chapter, it talks about how she hates being a lady and Sansa's so pretty and so nice. And she then points out Sansa's flaws. She's not good at numbers.
Right.
And then so this chapter, same thing. Septa Mordain is getting Sansa ready to go be in the king, the wheelhouse. And,
right.
You know, and she's talking about how Arya, you know, ruins everything. And Arya had a way of ruining everything. You know, it's just one of the lines, but she'll dress the way she always does. And it's, you know, talking about things like that. And then,
well, that she's wild too, right?
Right.
That she has this wild side to her and things. She even goes into her characteristics and her features.
You know, what's funny is that in the Arya chapter, I believe she asked Catelyn, she references a point in which she asked Catelyn if she was a bastard because she looks different. And
right.
Sansa asks the same thing.
Right.
And then Lady Catelyn says, so it's just interesting. They're like, they mirror each other. Like,
they do.
They're identical. But the line I thought was interesting was she found Arya on the banks of the Trident, trying to hold Nymeria still while she brushed dried mud from her fur. The dire wolf was not enjoying the process. Arya was wearing the same riding leather she had worn yesterday and the day before. You'd better put on something pretty, Sansa told her. Septa Mordain said so. We're traveling in the Queen's wheelhouse with Princess Marcella today. I'm not, Arya said, trying to brush a tangle out of Nymeria's matted gray fur. Micah and I are going to ride upstream and look for rubies at the ford. Rubies, Sansa said, lost. What rubies? Arya gave her a look like she was so stupid. Rhaegar's rubies. This is where King Robert killed him and won the crown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're different. I mean, they're both young, right? But when a story's being told or they're being told different things, different lessons by Mordain, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. One listens to, one tunes in, one tunes out. They just they're complete opposites.
Yeah.
Because the history is, I mean, that makes sense why, you know, Arya is super intrigued by that, right? These epic battles and this knights and things like that. You know, kind of like Bran.
Yeah. We'll come back to these rubies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll come back to these rubies. Sure. So we want to continue with Arya first.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I believe she kind of doesn't, she just sort of leave Arya to, you know, to Nymeria and things. It's neat too that,
You get to see, you see
the
just
dire wolves.
You see just a little bit more about how, just the differences, you know, between the two. It talks about how Arya, you know, got, they call it, what do they call it? They call it poison kisses as opposed to like poison ivy. It's basically the same thing. She got a rash on her arm and she was rubbing mud on it to, you know, get rid of it. And then they talk about how Arya, you know, would just ride and talk to random people and things like that. So, just kind of.
And
just,
Sansa hates riding.
Absolutely hates. Yeah.
Hates it now.
Yeah.
She hates it now.
Yeah.
She's going to love it here in a bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. 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 I guess I didn't pick up.
As soon as Joffrey, you know, asked to go riding. I love riding, you know. So,
yeah. And then, you know, then the line where they're talking about the queen and Arya's like, I don't like the queen. Arya said casually. Sansa sucked in her breath, shocked that even Arya would say such a thing before her sister prattled on heedless. She won't even let me bring Nymeria. She thrust the brush under her belt and stalked her wolf. Nymeria watching her approach warily. A royal wheelhouse is no place for a wolf, Sansa said. And Princess Marcella is afraid of them. You know that.
Yeah. Well, she should be.
So the lions are afraid of the wolves.
Yeah, they should be.
Sketch.
Yeah. these dire wolves are huge, right? They're no joke. And even Lady, who is like, I love that the characteristics you get and how they mirror, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Stark that they're with, because she like gracefully takes that bacon out of Sansa's hand to start, right?
Yeah.
So just two completely different dire wolves, right? But yeah, so anyways, I think Nymeria kind of, doesn't she bolt off here a little bit? And then Sansa, you know.
I mean, yeah. I mean, right here, here's the line, though, I have, we're just talking about. Sansa could never understand how two sisters born only 2 years apart could be so different. It would have been easier if Arya had been a bastard like their half-brother Jon. She even looked like Jon, with the long face and brown hair of the Starks and nothing of their lady mother in her face or her coloring. And Jon's mother had been common, or so people whispered. Once when she was little, Sansa had even asked mother if perhaps there hadn't been some mistake, perhaps the Grumpkins had stolen her real sister. So it's just just funny that they mirror each other in that they think that same way, but
Right. Yep. Okay. Gods be true, Arya. Sometimes you act like a child. She's like, I'll go by myself then. Right. So she's walking back. She's going to leave Arya to whatever she's up to. Let's see. So now as she gets closer, right, she's intrigued because there's this, is this the part I want to get to? Yeah. With the wheelhouse, right. She sees the queen standing out front, you know, sort of greeting, two different, men, mm-hmm. right? One's old, one's extremely young, his extreme youth. I thought that was mm-hmm. funny. But it's actually, Sir Barristan Selmy and Renly Baratheon. She sees are the newcomers. She also sees a third guy, who's super kind of scares her, right? And that's Sir Ilyn Payne.
Yeah. Well, shouldn't he?
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. I just thought it was pretty neat. They give some, one knight was, worn an intricate suit of white enamel scales, brilliant as a field of new-fallen snow, with silver chasings and clasps that glittered in the sun. He removed his helm. Sansa saw that he was an old man, with hair as pale as his armor, yet he seemed strong and graceful for all that. From his shoulders hung the pure white cloak of the Kingsguard. His companion was a man near 20, whose armor was steel plate of deep forest green. He was the most handsomest man Sansa had ever set eyes upon, tall, powerfully made. You know, that's interesting. He's the most handsomest man she's ever laid eyes on, right? Mm-hmm. Right now.
Yeah.
And it changes, right? Because I think Ger does a good job of, like, this is Sansa. You have to remember mm-hmm. who this is, and this is a little girl, right? Okay. He has jet black hair that fell to his shoulders and framed a clean shaven face and laughing green eyes to match his armor. Cradled under one arm was an antlered helm, its magnificent rack shimmering in gold. And so clearly there's the first one is Barristan Selmy and then Renly Baratheon, right? Now, let's see if we can figure out who this other fella is. Ilyn Payne is very interesting. At first, Sansa did not notice the third stranger. He did not kneel with the others. He stood to one side beside their horses, a gaunt, grim man who watched the proceedings in silence. His face was pockmarked and beardless, with deep-set eyes and hollow cheeks. Though he was not an old man, only a few wisps of hair remained to him, sprouting above his ears, but those he had grown long as a woman's. His armor was iron-gray chainmail over layers of boiled leather, plain and unadorned, and it spoke of age and hard use. Above his right shoulder, the stained leather hilt of a blade strapped to his back was visible, a two-handed greatsword, too long to be worn at his side. And that's your description of Ilyn Payne, right? Mm-hmm. Who is basically the king's justice, mm-hmm. right? He swings that sword and takes off heads.
Yeah.
That's what he does. Okay. Yeah. What do you got next?
Well, I was trying to find the thing from the Arya chapter, but I couldn't find it there just to show you the line for line.
The difference.
The line for line
similarity.
Yeah, similarity, yeah. And connection there. But pretty much after she's done with her little quiz there, which I just think is funny, is when Joffrey and her kind of end up going off.
Take off,
yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like drinking. Like, and Sansa's like, oh, I don't, you know, there's just, that's like.
Well, they're drinking a lot, actually.
Yeah.
This is
where Joffrey's kind of. I think Joffrey does still like her at this point, but I do feel like it still almost seems like even here before the incident happens, he does kind of look down on her.
Yeah, because she's from the north. I don't think right. he thinks very highly of anyone from
the north.
The north. I don't know, because he's got his mother's sort of like understanding of the kingdoms.
Yeah.
Right. And so.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised, I guess. I don't know that. I mean, it's a good union, I guess. But he's Joffrey Baratheon. You know, he's supposed to be a Baratheon, mm-hmm. But we know that he's not, and that makes it all the more interesting. But yeah, as they're going out and about, he actually stops. I think he's able to go in and say that he's the prince, and he sort of demands that they have some food and different things. And so they're actually having a good time. Joyriding around, he has to leave his she has to leave her wolf and he has to leave his dog behind.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, what would you like to do? Be with you, Sansa thought, but she said, whatever you'd like to do, my prince. Joffrey reflected a moment. We could go riding. Oh, I love riding, Sansa said.
Yeah.
Joffrey glanced back at Lady, who was following at their heels. Your wolf is liable to frighten the horses, and my dog seems to frighten you. Let us leave them both behind and set off on our own. What do you say? And then he laughs, and she's like, oh, I didn't know you had a dog. And he's talking about the hound, and, and they kind of go on there. Also, we listened to the audiobook, and Roy Dotrice, the guy who reads it, does such a good job at his version, you know, his version of Joffrey, where he just comes across as this totally smug, pompous,
he totally does.
Character, and so it's just so interesting hearing the audiobook version, because I think it just fits him so well, and
I think too one of the things there Sansa does is like she's not very I like that witty humor, right? Like picking up on like, oh, the dog is your hound, right? You know that.
Yeah,
she's a little slow on the uptake there, but she is still, I mean, she's well versed in like that, the quiz she passed with flying colors,
right?
She knows who is who. She's never met Ser Barristan Selmy and Renly Baratheon, but you know, she's able to put names to those two. So, you know, when you look at what she brings to the table, I think it's important. This chapter does tell us a lot. It's our first point of view for her, right? Okay, so now one of the reasons too, I forgot to mention that they weren't the only thing they had to accompany them on this ride was Lion's Tooth, right? Had Joffrey's sword, and so we'll get into Lion's Tooth here in a second. But as they're riding along, basically, you know, he's pressing his mount super hard, right? And her mare can kind of barely keep up, you know. They're out for just all these different adventures, as we said, going by the riverbank. They tracked a shadow cat to its lair, and this is when, you know, when they grew hungry, they found that holdfast.
That seems like a pretty bad idea, by
the
way.
Yeah, I know.
Considering Joffrey's skill at arms.
Exactly. I think he thinks he is, you
invincible.
Know. Yeah, I don't know. Like, he's been raised, I don't know if he's been raised that way or what, but he's probably also heard stories, too, from his father of things that he used to do.
Right.
But I don't know. So... When it's interesting too, we get it like is he not trained? Like, he wouldn't really cross swords with Rob back in Winterfell, and there's a reason. Like, those guys are trained hard with their master at arms. I'm wondering what his training is like. You know, is it just, is anyone willing to actually strike the prince? Like, because I think Rob Baratheon would be, put him out there. Let's let him get to work. But I think Cersei's kind of like always coddling and protecting him, and like, you know, if the boys are in the yard are afraid to even touch him, you know, it's kind of what I think, because like when we get to this butcher's boy scene here, and Arya's, I just don't think he's that good, you know what I mean?
I
don't think it's his fault. I think it's
never
more his
never really explained, but there is a scene in it's early in a clash of kings where they're having the tourney, I can't remember his name. The guy who gets Ser Dontus, right where the fool and they almost drown him. And at the very end of that, Tommen, they set up a little knight for Tommen to go ride against.
Oh yeah,
and it like, and he swings at it and it like spins around and knocks him off. Like off his horse, but everyone's like cheering and stuff like that. And so it seems like Tommen, you know, he's obviously a lot younger, especially in the books. But even Tommen, it was clearly like he hasn't been trained at all. Like they just set it up for him and say, okay, here you go. And so I would imagine Joffrey is.
I think that's Cersei's doing though, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I just think it's.
I don't think Robert cares.
No. And it's also his fault, too.
It is, yeah. I don't think Robert cares, because I think Robert just wants to drink.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. But, you know...
It's really unfortunate. We don't get anything between Robert and...
Like his
and,
kids.
And Joffrey and how... What he...
I mean, we talked about last week is him seeking his father's approval, right? You know, trying possibly, you know, to send the cat's paw to kill Bran. But still, it's, you know, it's definitely... It's just kind of sad, and I just think it explains a lot as to why he is weak and completely, you know, like he's like calling out for his life here at the end of this chapter with the little girl holding a sword at him. I don't know. So
yeah, and well, your real question is, I mean, did Jaime ever try and train him? Jaime's in the Kingsguard. Yeah. He knows his dad. He'd have to.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, he's, you know, especially at this point, arguably one of the greatest knights.
I know.
You know, yeah. Ever and alive currently. So.
Right. Well, I think, that takes us, we're clear out of the chapter now, but Tywin, right? And him possibly allowing, you know, Joffrey to be assassinated, right? Mm-hmm. So that way he could actually raise Tommen the way he's supposed to be raised, you know?
Yeah.
Type of thing. So. Okay.
So kind of back to it here with that. They dined on trout fresh from the river, and Sansa drank more wine than she had ever drunk before. My father only lets us have one cup, and only at feasts, she confessed to her prince. My betrothed can drink as much as she wants, Joffrey said, refilling her cup. The fact that they're even fishing seems odd to me. Like, just doesn't seem like Joffrey's.
Well, they dined on trout. So they actually, right before that,
they brought it with them. Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, no, they go to
Holdfast. That's right.
Holdfast, yeah.
Yeah.
By its smoke, and they told them to fetch food and wine for their prince and lady. So he's just going in using but you know, as they move out, right, they're full, and since they're full, they're riding a little slower, right, a little sluggish. They hear this clack clack, you know, off to the woods or whatever, and Sansa's sort of like, no, we should go, you know. It doesn't sound good, right? But it's the tapping of swords.
Yeah. Well, right? Before we get to there,
yeah.
There's another line we're gonna have to dissect at the end of this. Shouldn't we be starting back? She asked. Soon, Joffrey said. The battleground is right up here where the river bends. That was where my father killed Rhaegar Targaryen, you know. He smashed in his chest, crunch, right through the armor. Joffrey swung an imaginary warhammer to show her how it was done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just two lines from a big theory in there that maybe Rhaegar didn't die at the Trident.
Hey, so. Maybe he didn't. Yeah. So. Okay, so what do you got next?
So this is when they get up there. Someone's there, Sansa said anxiously. She found herself thinking of Lady, wishing the direwolf was with her. You're safe with me. Joffrey drew his lion's tooth from its sheath. The sound on steel... The steel of leather made her tremble this way, he said, riding through the trees. And they see up here beyond in a clearing overlooking the river. They came across a boy and a girl playing at night. The swords were wooden sticks, broom handles from the look of them. And they were rushing across the grass, swinging at each other lustily. The boy was years older and a head taller and much stronger as he was pressing attack. The girl, a scrawny thing in soiled leathers, was dodging and managing to get her stick in the way of most of the boy's blow, but not all. And then Prince Joffrey laughed. The boy looked around, wide-eyed and startled, and dropping his stick in the grass. The girl glared at them, sucking on her knuckles to take the sting out because she was hit in the hand. And Sansa was horrified. Arya, she called out incredulously. Go away, Arya, shouted back at them, angry tears in her eyes. What are you doing here? Leave us alone. And this is where things go real bad.
Yeah, they do. You know, I think Arya, as you said before, she's going out, she's talking to different people, and she's come across this butcher's boy, and she's friends with him, right? And they're just out playing swords, you know, playing knights, as it says.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think Prince Joffrey, he's just a cruel kid, right? Once he sees this butcher's boy, he probably didn't even recognize. Unless Sansa would have said Arya, he would have known, I don't really think, unless he gets close and he's
right.
Really seen her a whole lot. But she's not dressed up. She's wearing the same leathers that she's worn for the past 3 days. And basically, you know, he takes this opportunity to go in there and kind of show off slash, you know, torment a little bit. He knows the butcher's boy is afraid because he drops his stick and he steps back a little bit. And he totally takes advantage of this situation. And Sansa sees it's bad. I think somewhere underneath, she's starting to kind of, maybe this is the first time, but this is definitely the first time. But just the tone that he takes here and this look that he has in his eyes, mm-hmm. right?
It's cruel, you know? Yeah, Micah shook his head. It's only a stick, my lord. It's not a sword. It's only a stick. And you're only a butcher boy and no knight. And then, you know, a line that's in the show, I believe he says, and I believe Joffrey says, and I'm your prince. And he's like, it's only a stick, my prince.
Mm-hmm.
It's differing, but I I think they're both good.
Yeah, he just makes sure he's insisting that he call him my prince.
Yeah,
right.
Which is cool because later, he flips out on Sansa when he refers to him as, like your prince, and he's like, it's your grace now because
oh yeah,
dead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. But you know, again, so once he's had this back and forth conversation, right? He takes his sword and it seems like he starts to kind of press it against. In the show, it's his cheek, right? It looks like it's his face.
Same here too. A bright bud of blood blossomed. Wow, there's a tongue twister for you. Where his sword pressed into Micah's flesh, a slow red line trickled down the boy's cheek.
Yeah, and that obviously angers Arya, and she comes out of nowhere, right, and tries to crack this her wooden sword over his arm to stop him, right. And I think she breaks it. She swings it so hard.
Yeah.
And really, you know, infuriates him. And then So Micah, I don't know if he takes off here or if he takes off in just a bit. But, you know, he starts swinging his sword at Arya. He actually starts to kind of like swing and attack Arya. Mm-hmm. And Sansa's just screaming, you know, stop, 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 stop. And I just think things really get out of control here. Like, yeah. What would happen if he would have killed Arya? You know what I mean? Like, right? I mean, that would be pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
He does not often think, it's kind of foreshadowing.
Robert Baratheon probably would have killed him.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying it is foreshadowing, right? That, like, he doesn't think through on his actions. He thinks he's the prince. He can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And that there are no consequences. He doesn't quite understand it. And again, his mother, that's why he needs a regent, right? She should not be ruling on his own, but yeah, whatever. So anyways, you know, as he's swinging and stuff, Nymeria comes out of nowhere, takes him out, bites his arm, right? And Micah's getting the heck out of there. He's took off for the woods. I think actually at one point, Arya throws a rock, too, and, like, hits Joffrey's horse. So it bolts into the woods, you know, after Micah.
Yeah, I remember that Arya picks up Lion's Tooth and throws it into the river.
Right, yeah, right after Nymeria, she bites him or whatever, you know, The line that she mocks Joffrey with is he's pressing the sword into the butcher boy's face and he says, I won't hurt him much. And then she says, you know, when Nymeria like bites him, whatever, she was like, it didn't hurt that much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Type of thing. So
now just think about this for a second.
Yeah.
So Rhaegar dies. I'm seeing a rabbit hole here.
Mm-hmm.
Rhaegar dies. Rubies and his sword fall into the trident.
Mm-hmm.
Then Joffrey, another king, gets his sword thrown into the trident.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Did they ever get Lion's Tooth back?
No, I don't think so.
No?
Yeah. I know the Hound makes fun of him for it, calling it his sword Lion's Tooth.
Yeah. I don't know what to check here. I can't remember if he did it, if he does not. I know he gets a new sword. Later on, I can't remember. I'm pretty sure that he does lose it.
Widow's Wail, the Valyrian steel.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, because you imagine the Trident's not a creek; it's a river, right?
No, it's a big river. Yeah,
so it's going down to the bottom of that thing. So okay, you know. So and then here's where he gets kind of venomous with Sansa, right?
No, I'm sorry. King Joffrey receives a replacement sword, Heart Eater. Sansa and then. Yep, just that's it. That's all we know.
Okay. Nymeria has attacked him and basically, you know, he's bleeding in his arm there, right? He's got all sorts of like he's freaking out. And Arya, before she tossed that sword, she kind of had it, you know, held over him for a second, then she chucks it. His eyes snapped open and he looked at her and there was nothing but loathing there. Nothing but the vilest contempt. Then go, he spit at her, and don't touch me. Mm-hmm. So Sansa's trying to comfort him and things and, you know, and tell him that she's going to go get help. It's going to be okay. Don't worry. Blah, blah, blah. And then he's just super irritated, you know, super mad. He hates to be embarrassed, I think, is the thing. He hates to be, he's been bested by a girl and this direwolf attacks him and all this stuff. It's just kind of, he was the tormentor and now he's being tormented. It's just, it's, you know, but it's also just kids too, you know.
Yeah.
And that's sort of Robert Baratheon's point later. They're kids.
They're kids. Yeah.
Although I think Joffrey was taking it a little bit too far attacking Arya the way that he looked like he was intending to. Especially in the show, they do a good job of like,
they do.
He's swinging that sword, and if she's not dodging it, like,
she could get hit.
She could get hit, right? And yeah. what's going to happen? I mean, yeah. you know, that could be bad. People and die from infections and stuff.
And it's a good sword, too. It's,
right.
You it's, know, they exactly. talk about that. It's yeah. So I have the wiki pulled up for Lion's Tooth here. So something interesting. Wow. In A Storm of Swords, within the Hollow Hill, Arya Stark remembers the sword as Lion's Paw. Gurr has gone on record and stated that, because people are like, oh, is this a typo? Like, what? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gurr has gone on record and stated that he was trying to establish that the memories of his viewpoint characters are not infallible by having Lion's Tooth name be misremembered.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah.
So that's just a
point of view is everything.
Point of view is everything.
Right. And that goes back to Tyrion not quite remembering the conversation that was had.
Right.
You know, up at Winterfell mm-hmm. with the Hound in the morning in the yard.
Yeah.
You know, so do they remember everything exactly? Because we went back and looked at last episode. We went back and actually checked and read from the book what Joffrey was saying, and it was not exactly what Tyrion repeated later in A Storm of Swords.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I messed up. Sorry. It is Renly that laughs at the name of the sword being Lion's Tooth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Gotcha. All right. Okay. Any cool connections for this week?
No, I didn't have any. I think pulled up.
I think we've talked about the Trident. We've talked about Robert Baratheon and the rubies and
yeah.
And I think that deserves again maybe a black council
something
at
yeah.
some time. Yeah, just kind of go over that war, Robert's rebellion and things. Mm-hmm. So. Because they're often referenced the rubies there and people seeking after them and maybe somebody's found, maybe they found some, and then also the red glowing ruby mm-hmm. you know and it being a glamour of some kind.
Absolutely.
So yeah. All right, so let's move on to Send a Raven. What do we have any ravens this week? We want to kind of.
Yeah, we got one while we were recording. We got one on Instagram.
Oh yeah.
So this is from Ryan Brady 7, no relation.
Cool.
That I know of. Hey guys, great episode past couple weeks. Just rereading myself and just got through the prologue of A Clash of Kings, Patch Face. After I finished, I went to the wiki, was just curious about your guys' thoughts on if he has a role to play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Patchface. Yeah, very interesting character. Has some connections possibly to the Drowned God.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, Alt Shift X did a video on him recently, I believe,
right.
And it's really in depth and really good. But he is a very interesting character. Like the wiki has its own section on him, just in terms of.
Theories and stuff.
Just in terms of theories.
Yep.
Because there are so many theories around him. So for those of you guys who maybe haven't got there yet or are unfamiliar, mm-hmm. Patchface is Stannis's kind of court jester
mm-hmm.
on Dragonstone. He has like tattoos on his face. He speaks what do they call that?
He speaks what?
The way he speaks, there's like a name for it because he speaks in kind of an odd
like his cadence?
Yeah. I thought there was a name for it. But anyway, so he
in rhymes?
Maybe.
Cuz he's always speaking in sort of like in riddles and rhymes
right.
and it's almost like he's chanting oftentimes and it's sing-songy like cuz a lot of his stuff is about the Drowned God because you know, again, his story is sort of that there were no survivors from that mm-hmm. shipwreck out in the narrow sea, and he ends up washing ashore. They have these dead bodies that were washing up, as what I recall, and Patchface actually is the one who survives, I think.
Yeah,
and is found by House Baratheon
mm-hmm.
and becomes their court jester.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, so I just have his wiki pulled up here for some quotes and things like that. During when they're burning the Seven on Dragonstone and they're trying to proclaim, he says like under the sea smoke rises and bubbles and flames burn green and blue and black. I know, oh. He says that a lot. Like that's mm-hmm. he's kind of doing that. He is a fool, so I guess you should take that into consideration and.
Do you know what's interesting? You know, I think what may happen with Patchface actually is. The way he speaks, right? People have done theories on how different characters, their I call it like their their style of speaking or their tone or what have you, when that shifts, or even their accents or their, because we have some people, we have some interesting characters beyond the wall who at one point are talking like pirates, but then they switch back to real, you know, but then when people aren't paying attention, they're speaking as lords from, you know, Westeros.
Yep.
So are they pirates or are they lords, you know, and things. So I'm interested to keep watching. I don't know exactly, you know, what his role is going to be, but if he switches,
right,
you know, the way in which he speaks.
Yeah. So here we go. I'm just going to read his history from the wiki here. Patchface was a jester slave in Volantis. He was a clever boy with astonishing wit. His freedom brought him. His freedom was bought by Lord Stefan Baratheon, who was impressed with him and intended to bring him back to Storm's End from his trip to the Free City. Stefan Baratheon is Robert's dad.
Father.
Right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Maester Cresson regrets that Patchface never did teach Stannis to laugh. Lord Stefan Baratheon's ship, Windproud, broke up in Shipwrecker Bay within sight of Storm's End while his sons Stannis and Robert watched. Everyone aboard the ship was killed, including the Lord, his lady, and over 100 soldiers and sailors. Patchface washed up 3 days later, his naked skin white, wrinkled, and the man that found him, Jommy, swears to his dying day that the fool's skin was clammy cold. They had taken him for dead, but when he coughed up water, albeit broken in mind and body, the ordeal had taken some of his memories and half his wit. Now he is the subject to twitches and trembles and mostly incoherent. What happened to him during the 2 days is unknown, but the fisher folk like to say a mermaid had taught him to breathe water in return for his seed. It is suggested by Sir Harbert, the Castilian of Storm's End, that it would have been kindest for Maester Cresson to let the mad boy die, but he had refused and now wonders at that decision. Patchface is employed as a court fool and jester at Dragonstone. He spends most of his time with Stannis, with Shireen Baratheon, Stannis' daughter, who calls him Patches. He offers her strange insights and stranger songs, sometimes touching on what may have really happened to the boy at the bottom of the bay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and he also makes some eerie sort of like predictions and things. Like he actually, it's almost like he's having like as he's saying things, the court is not yet privy to this information, but Patchface is.
Right.
Which is very interesting.
Right. And, you know, there is, you know, it's on the other side, obviously, from Storm's End is Pyke and the Iron Islands, where they have the Drowned God. But something interesting about people who drowned. So just because, even if you're not an Iron Islander, you can still drown and come back to life. Because in The Sworn Sword, the second book of the Duncan Egg series, in the Night of the Seven Kingdoms.
Right.
Which I want to give a quick shout out to one of our Instagram followers. I believe it's like Kylan, she was like messaging me and she like got. And so hope you're enjoying that. But in that, Sir Duncan the Tall is fighting Lucas Longinch, and then they fight and he kind of goes underwater, and then you just find out that one of the maesters that kind of tends to him is, well, I'm of the Drowned God.
That's right.
And so I was able to kind of save you.
And he was able to save him because he does drown.
Yeah. He does drown. Yeah. Yep. So it's just interesting that this...
What's
dead may never die.
So Sir Dunk is still alive.
And so kind of maybe the same thing with Patchface.
Mm-hmm.
So could maybe there is an Iron Islands tie later that could happen or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I think he also might be... This is super rabbit hole and tinfoil hat here, but connected in somehow to this network of spies and secrecy.
Absolutely.
That goes on in the kingdoms. Because he does know, either one, he's having dreams that are sent to him by a god of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a drowned god or not is whatever. The Green Seers and the Green Dreams, they have these powers. Mm-hmm. We see these things. That, you know, they dream things that actually come true, and they see things that happen at the same time as their time, right? And so... Mm-hmm. But anyways, I'm interested in, like, you know, his, one of the quotes here, fool's blood, king's blood, blood on the maiden's thigh, but chains for the guest and chains for the bridegroom. I. If all of a sudden he stopped speaking like that and took a very serious, elegant tone, and you overheard him talking to someone else, wow, that would send chills down my, you know, back, right? I would be like, what is going on now with Patrick? Has he really kept up this facade this whole time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or is he half mad, half not? You know what I mean? So there's a lot of people who speculate. He's with Shireen quite a bit. Melisandre considers him to be dangerous. She sees him in her fires.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Of all people, Patchface. Why?
Yeah, I think he has an important role to play.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm going to right now go to our Green Dreams doc, and I'm going to write down some more speculation for Patchface, because Green Dreams is our Patreon series where we basically kind of go over at the end of A Dance of Dragons, who's left, where are they, and what could they be getting into? And so he's one of those characters who's interesting.
Yeah.
So awesome. That's cool.
Okay, well, Sir Ezra, normally this is the part where we man the wall.
Yep.
And we actually had a knighting ceremony kind of planned, but as we were talking, this is how it happens, you know, guys, this is how we adjust. The person we were going to knight actually sent us a raven on Facebook. My lords, I'm curious. I was looking into the possibility of a maester's oath, so perhaps that could be done instead of a knighting ceremony.
100%. Wow.
I tried looking more into it, and all I could find was...
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious right now. Just crazy. So
what are the odds of that?
What are the odds? I know. Yeah, literally as we're recording...
Wow.
So it. To be fair, we do normally say, "Hey guys, we record on Sunday."
Yeah, we do.
We didn't mention that we were having
vacations.
Yeah. So that's. But anyway, I'll continue read here. I tried looking more into it. And all I could find was that the Citadel has a sacred oath, but I could not find the source that has the actual words. Do you guys know the words? Thoughts?
Huh.
Okay. Well, absolutely. We are definitely down for those of you that want to become a maester. And remember, I believe those of you who take the black, the $10 tier, you are entitled to a knighting ceremony and to take the black. But as always, you can kind of do really what you want.
Right, absolutely. If you send us something, I mean.
We have some people that just want to be faceless men. And stuff like that. So really it's...
Oh, we've got the Ghost of Harrenhal, for crying out loud.
Yeah, and we also found, I think we mentioned this before, a sworn sword, kind of an oath.
Right, which we might actually make that another tier.
Yeah, make that another tier, or add that in later. So there's a lot,
because you know, as the show grows, one of the reasons you have a Patreon, right, is just to support the show,
right.
Help us with content, help us make a better show for all the listeners. And a part of that is at some point, you know, you guys provide ravens, which is content. You also give us theories and things like that, but. You know, we ask you guys to vote on things as to which way we should go. I actually just did the other day. I was talking about reading this, point by point. I think it was Sir Jared, Sir Robbie, and Sir Adam were kind of giving me advice on which way I should go with point of view.
Yeah.
You know, should it be Jon Snow, Daenerys, Tyrion?
Ew.
You know, and basically, I'm not talking just reading it through a Game of Thrones.
The whole thing.
I'm talking about reading the whole series from one point of view. And I think I can do that, not quickly, but I think I can.
Yeah, fortunately, you are you're kind of a maester, you know, you teach. So, you kind of have this big, long summer.
Right. So I'm hoping I can take one of those and really get a taste of what that's like.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a cool way to do it. Yeah.
It might change my perspective on some things. And so, but I need, you know, it was nice that I had people who I could bounce ideas off of. So if we do make another tier, it's simply, it would be more, you know, for that person to be more involved in the show. And
absolutely.
Help
yeah, that's,
influence
yeah,
the show.
Yeah, that's really what those are all about. So, unfortunately, we're gonna put the knighting ceremony on hiatus. For this week because of the.
That was going to be Maester Jaime.
Maester
Jaime, thank you so much for sending us that, and
thank the gods.
Thank the gods.
I mean, I'm just gonna go with the old.
No, I rolled in new.
Maybe we the drowned as well, because I mean, literally just stopped us.
Like, I'm talking like a minute before I just got it myself. I just saw my phone.
It's 8 p.m. here, and it was sent at 7:33 p.m.
Perfect.
So, wow, just literally. It was doing it as we were in the last segment. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to stop you.
That's awesome. Okay. So, again, Man the Wall is our Patreon plug. We've got Mead, Meat, and Cheese there. We've got Black Council. Our first Green Dream will be happening in between our vacations. I think we're going to sit down and kind of do a little chat. And if we want it to be Patch Face, I'm okay with that. I had a list of different questions. I was really looking into the Dane house and what's happening with Edric Dane and Edric Storm is different.
And really, let us know what you guys want. And that's, you know, we'll
Yeah, exactly.
We'll steer it that way because that's what it's there for.
Yeah, for sure. If there's something you want us to cover, I mean, again, we have a very, very, very interesting, it just takes time, these theories that we're working on with some Targaryens. I'll just say this. A Targaryen that I think has been overlooked by everyone and I believe is alive.
Yeah.
Okay? That's all I'm going to say. And it is not going to be who you suspect.
And I have,
you can guess if you would like. Yeah, go
ahead
and guess.
Sir Ezra has a theory he's working on. I have a theory I'm working on, in that there's, you know, the initial rabbit hole. There's a pretty strong second rabbit hole that I think is viable. And then there's the third rabbit hole, which, you know, I don't think I've seen anyone say, and I think it's legitimate. Or you could just view it as one rabbit hole where there's like three layers, and I'm just going as deep and as you possibly go.
That's fine. You guys have created a monster in Sir Matt. I mean, he just like, he puts his tinfoil hat on now in all seriousness and does go down rabbit holes.
I prefer like Valyrian steel hat.
Same thing. Okay, awesome. So that's Man the Wall. It's time for us to say farewell. We will be back with our follow-up Friday, actually, and so make sure you send those ravens to BTKcast. But
here we go. We want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 15, Eddard 3.
Yep. If you like our podcast, don't
forget... Chapter 16.
Yep. If you don't like our podcast, please don't subscribe.
If you don't like our podcast, please don't give us bad reviews.
Please don't do that. Yeah. Send those to Facebook. Actually.
Yeah. But real quick, I will give us a plug for reviews. If you want to help the show,
yeah, good call.
A free way to help the show is either a Facebook and especially an iTunes review.
Yeah, and
those are absolutely huge.
We are going to work on getting some swag.
We have a little bit. We're potentially considering.
I think we're looking at getting something else that might be helpful. Okay, so we'll get that and we'll get that out to you guys for sure. So, all right, if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, or leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We'll see you in a week, and remember that winter is coming.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.